All right, just a couple minutes before we get started. Go ahead, get settled in. Prepare yourself to be educated and stimulated today because I got a lot of material to cover. Have to talk fast. Tons of stuff to give you today. If you haven't downloaded a copy of the workbook, I'll make a link to that available again here in just a second. If the screen doesn't render appropriately, because in the past I've had some people email me or call and say, hey, I could hear you fine, but I couldn't see the screen. Go ahead and click refresh on your browser now, and it should render right where we are in today's content. If you have any questions, please feel free to email me on the address you see on the screen, and that's roger@seninja.com. And I will answer those as quickly as I can, but please understand that there's so much content today, I doubt there's going to be time at the end to answer questions today. So I'll either email you back or I'll do a separate session, maybe a teleseminar or something like that, and just answer questions. Okay, so let's get started. Welcome to 5 Alarming Business Trends That Could Put You Out of Business or Send You Soaring. Do yourself a favor. Turn off or shut down your cell phone, email, your office phone, Facebook, Twitter, or any other browser windows. And the reason I say that is because we've got clutter everywhere. We live in an always-on 24/7, 365 society. We've got 24-hour news sources like CNN, ESPN, Fox News. It's given us all some form of ADD. If you don't believe me, next time you go out to eat, observe others. Notice how many people don't have some type of an electronic device in use, whether they're text messaging, they're talking to somebody on the phone, they're checking sports scores, or whatever it is. The other day I went to a little sub shop and I looked around. I hardly ever take my phone in when I go eat somewhere. That's my little 30 minutes to an hour to just kind of unplug for a little bit. But I noticed I was the only person in that sub shop that didn't have a cell phone, either talking to somebody, texting, or checking something on the device itself. So give yourself the gift of focus for just 60 minutes. And I mentioned I'm going to try to keep this at 60 minutes. I'm going to set my timer now, and hopefully we'll be able to cover all today's material in that 60 minutes. Okay, the reason I mentioned shutting everything down is because the number of commercial messages per day is absolutely astronomical. Back in 1971, that number was 560 commercial messages per day. 1980, that number grew to 2,000. By 1997, that number was estimated to reach 3,000. And today, we are looking at 30,000 plus commercial messages. For decision makers, it's even more. Some estimates say as much as two times more. That's an increase in commercial messages of 5,357% in just 40 years. I say in just 40 years because look at the jump. I mean, from 1997, we went from 3,000 to 2010, just 13 years later, 30,000 plus. So where are we headed with all this commercial message stuff? What you see on your screen now is an estimate that my firm and I have created. And you can see in the year 2020, it's estimated to be 35,252 commercial messages per day, and then in the year 2030, 45,715. Now, if we see a jump like we did from 97 to 2010, these numbers could be very conservative. But you can see we are bombarded from every angle by commercial messages and people wanting to gain our attention, which means it's harder than ever to get attention from prospects, stand out above the clutter, and have your message delivered, much less heard. It's also very difficult to compete effectively because you can't sustain an advantage when there's so much information being shared pretty much real time these days. You got outlets like Twitter and Facebook to where people can share information almost instantaneously. And to give you an example of how quickly information travels, not too long ago we had a little minor earthquake in Louisville, and it happened about 5:15 in the morning. It just kind of felt weird. So what I did is I went in and checked my computer to see what's going on. You know, did something happen and I not know it, or was it just something hit the house or what? So I noticed on Twitter that people were talking about it almost instantaneously, whereas the news outlets didn't report it for about another hour and a half. So that's how quickly information travels these days. Hi, my name's Roger Bauer. I'm the founder and CEO of SMB Consulting, a Louisville, Kentucky-based sales and marketing firm. And some of the services that we provide and some of the results we've helped our clients achieve have come through services such as search engine optimization, marketing automation, web design, education marketing, sales and marketing training. And back in my previous life, I used to be in technical sales and support, more in technical support than sales, but I did have a four-year career in technical sales. And I had an aha moment when I was meeting with a small oil distributor just outside of Louisville. As I talked to him, what I initially went in to do is talk to him about a new phone system, faster routers, and maybe some handheld device technology that he could use to implement into his business. And as I talked to him, the more and more I heard were problems such as cash flow, meeting payroll, operations issues, and getting visibility for his distributorship. And that led me to the moment I walked out of that meeting with him that day, I decided I'm going to start my own business and I'm going to find a better way because there has to be a better way. Because he didn't need a faster router or a more efficient phone system. What he needed was marketing and operations help. So initially I set out to establish a strategic consulting firm that quickly segued into becoming a marketing consulting firm just over evolution and learning different things and stuff that I had to do for my own business to gain visibility. So that's how I arrived at today's point in time. But please understand, none of this stuff today is about me. It's all about you and helping you grow your business. So what are you going to discover today? Obviously, you got on to today's executive briefing to learn the five alarming business trends that could take you out of business or send you soaring. We've already covered one trend, so we got four more to go. I'm also going to talk to you about five reasons for failing businesses, which then will segue into eight steps to fuel your sales over the next 12 to 18 months. Then we'll talk about eight strategies to improve your sales and marketing performance almost immediately. And then finally, we'll close out with seven things to look for in a potential sales and marketing partner. I mentioned earlier, I'm going to have to talk very fast because I have a ton of material to cover and I don't want to shortchange you. So I am going to talk a little bit fast today. Please feel free to take notes. In fact, I encourage it, but understand I'm going to talk very fast, at least fast for me. What you see on your screen now is a buying diamond of any market in any industry. At the top, you see 2% of your prospects are actively buying what it is that you offer today. 14% may be considering. 68% are indifferent or don't really care right now. And then that 16% you see in the bottom in the red area are never going to consider what it is that you offer. It's a lot like trying to sell jock itch powder to women or feminine hygiene products to men. Not the right product, not the right message, not the right time. Just not going to be interested. And this is a lot like the political makeup. When you see politicians campaigning to be elected, they do one thing well, maybe only one thing well. They understand the swing voters, and that's who you see in that 68%. They also understand that 16% of the people are never going to listen to their message no matter what they do. Now, how do you reach that 68% that are indifferent and then also the 14% that are considering? The 82% of the market that you can likely gain an audience with. We're going to talk about that today, but I'll just summarize it to say you need to educate them to get their attention and build your case. Combine a little bit of self-interest and curiosity, and you'll get people to come around to more of your way of thinking. Now, you notice I didn't say that the 2% that are actively buying right now may be prospects for you, because those are the 2% of the people that consider the RFP process. They've already made up their mind. They've already got their selection made and they're getting ready. If they're not already purchasing at the moment, they're already in somebody else's pocket. So to overcome that competitor, if you're not already in front of them and you're not already talking to them, it's going to be rather difficult. All right, so now I'm going to talk to you about how most companies handle rejection. And these numbers should startle you if you don't already know them or you haven't been made aware of them. 52% of organizations give up after just one rejection. 80% give up after two rejections. 93% give up after three rejections. And only 5% of organizations will persist after four or more rejections. So 95% of organizations out there quit after four or more rejections. Well, you may be asking, how much persistence is necessary to close a deal? We're going to talk about that. This is the key to unlocking more sales for your business. In the 80s, it required you four exposures to a prospect to reach a deal. In the 90s, that number doubled, a little more than doubled, to 8.4 exposures. And now today, we face the obstacle of 9.3 exposures necessary to take a prospect to close a deal. So what does that mean? That means it requires 132% more effort to produce the same results as back in the 80s. And why is that? Well, it's a lot about that clutter factor that I talked about early on, the ADD we all seem to have, and then we're impatient. We live in a microwave society. We want what we want now. We don't want to wait on it. I mean, think about when you go to Amazon and you make a purchase. You really want that thing to show up the next day. And you start to get a little bit antsy when it goes 3 or 4 days and you haven't seen the product. That's the society we live in today. So 132% more effort to produce the same results as 30 years ago. This next screen shows you the number of touch points to close a deal. As you can see, 81% of most deals close after 5 or more touches. 10% close after 4 touches, 4% close after 3, 3% after 2, and then 2% after 1 touch. And I would suggest to you that the 2% that are closing after 1 touch are existing clients, which segues nicely into this next screen, which shows you the number of touches broken down by new clients versus existing clients. As you can see on the left, that's the number of touches required. In the middle, you see number of new clients that closed after those touches, and then on the right, existing clients. As you can see, 1 to 2 touches, only 4% of new clients are closing deals, while 39% of existing are. 3 to 5 touches, 32% of new clients, 45% of existing clients. So that's kind of the sweet spot for existing clients, 3 to 5 exposures. 6 to 9 touches, 38% of new clients. It's kind of the sweet spot for them, and that's in line with the 9.3 exposures we talked about earlier. And then 3% of existing clients. So you can see, if you have a really good offer, existing clients doesn't take as much effort. 10 plus exposures, 30% of new clients, almost 1 in 3, and then 13% of existing clients. This all comes from CSO Insights. So what that tells us is it's 10 times more expensive to acquire a new client versus selling to an existing one. Ask yourself this question. What new or complementary thing can you offer existing clients, whether it's an upsell, an upgrade, or some type of special? Maybe you extend the warranty or the guarantee. What can you offer existing clients to get them to purchase again or purchase more when they do purchase? That's one of the key takeaways I hope you get from today's executive briefing. Here's a stat to consider from Gartner Research. 67% of the prospective buyers that tell you no today will buy within the next year. So in other words, you lay the foundation, your competition reaps the benefits. And why is it? I just showed you. Most organizations give up way too soon. Here's another stat that supports that from Serious Decisions. 80% of the leads you consider dead today will buy within 2 years. So what does all of this mean? This means you have less than 1% chance of closing a deal if you run a typical organization. To take it further, that means you would have to make 104 calls to close one deal. 104 calls. So how can you offset this? Well, you can develop a superior access vehicle, implement systems, and utilize automation. We're going to talk more about this as we progress today. Here's some facts and stats that demonstrate the reality of owning and running a business today. 1 in 25 businesses will survive 10 years. 80% of businesses fail within 2 years. 90% fail within 3. Since 1990, a business closes its doors 1 every 6 minutes and 49 seconds. A company changes control every 15 minutes. A directorship changes every 32 seconds. Now, what about innovation? Do we have a problem with that? Well, 26,000 new products and brands are introduced every single year, yet 75% of those fail. What's the problem here? Innovation's not the issue. If you can produce 26,000 new products and brands a year, that suggests that coming up with new ideas and new products to offer, not really an issue. Sales are the problem. We're not selling enough of those products, because if 75% of them fail, that's the issue. We're going to talk more about that today, obviously. The average number of business bankruptcies since 1985 is 236 per day. which translates into $52,007 per year. Think about that. $52,007 bankruptcies per year. That's enough to fill a good-sized football stadium. Now, what about the current state of the economy? Well, from 1985 to 1993, there were 76% more business bankruptcies than 2002 to 2010, the period of the most recent statistics over a similar period. 76% more from 85 to 93. There were 28% fewer business bankruptcies from 2000 to 2010 versus the decade previous, 1990 to 1999. Let me repeat that. 28% fewer business bankruptcies from 2000 to 2010 versus 1990 to 1999. What does that really mean? That means we've endured worse times. So all this stuff about the economy, numbers don't bear it out in terms of businesses. Maybe individually we got a lot of people hurting. In fact, we do. But in terms of business bankruptcies and businesses going under, not as bad. So we have endured worse times. Are you finally ready to take the blindfold off? Because success could be just around the corner. Why do I say that? Because only 8% of franchises fail. That means it is 12 times more likely for a franchise to succeed versus a regular business like you or I run, or you and I will likely run. You may be part of a franchise, but why do franchises succeed when regular businesses fail? In a word, systems. Franchises have marketing systems, hiring systems, operation systems, and training systems. So why do so many regular businesses fail? Well, here are five reasons from Entrepreneur Magazine. Number one, bad customer relations. Number two, bad budgeting. Number three, lack of staff training. Number four, failure to anticipate market trends. And then number five, which is the one I think is the biggie, poor or inconsistent marketing. Obviously, we're going to talk more about poor and inconsistent marketing as we progress, but that to me is the number one cause. And the reason I say that is, think about the last restaurant near you that went out of business. Did you ever go to it? And if you did, was the food that bad? Chances are it probably wasn't. And I've got a restaurant that went out of business around the corner from me. It's a little Chinese restaurant. It had a buffet. First couple times I went in, the place was packed because it was new. And you know how most people go flood a new business, right, or a new restaurant when it opens. The third time I went in, it was dead. The fourth time, even more dead. I think I was one of two people in there that last time I went. And as I checked out and signed my check and paid the bill, I asked the owner, I said, "So, what do you do to market your business?" He said, "Oh, it's all word of mouth." And I wasn't trying to be a smartass, but I asked him, I said, "How's that working out for you?" He said, "Oh, it's great. I don't have to spend any money on advertising or marketing." Well, it showed, because a month later, they were out of business. But the reason I bring this up is that Chinese restaurant's food was very good. They had a really good pepper chicken. That's the reason I went back, because I'm like, "Oh, that's really good." But most businesses fall victim to that as well. And what is that? That's poor or inconsistent marketing. And it's also relying on one marketing vehicle to grow your business, which we're going to talk about in just a moment when I get into the 8 steps to fuel your sales and also the 8 strategies here in a little bit, ways you can offset this. Now, isn't it time to stop blaming all these external factors like the economy, the administration, your market, your competitors, your parents, your kids, or your spouse? Because you can grow in today's business climate. Even if the economy's bad, I just proved to you with the statistics that we've endured worse times. And also, when was the most wealth created? During the Great Depression. So if we're facing similar times, doesn't it reason to believe that we are embarking on another period of great wealth creation? I think we are. And I'm not going to say I hope we are. I think we are. I don't believe in that hope as a strategy type thing. In fact, there's a book on that. Hope is not a strategy. Agree with that too, but that's a sidebar we won't get into. So are you ready to fix what ails you? Let's talk about 8 steps to fuel your sales. Number one, develop a superior access vehicle. I mentioned this briefly earlier. Target ideal prospects. This allows you to finally reach the 84% of the buying diamond that's so difficult for you to reach today. This will let you preempt your competition, educate your prospects, and position you as an expert. Always remember this little acronym, WIFM. And what is that? What's in it for me? When you develop a superior access vehicle, you can shrink that 104 calls necessary to close a deal. Most organizations think tactically and not strategically. And what I'm talking about here is a superior access vehicle. Think about something like 5 suicidal marketing mistakes you don't want to make, or 5 dangerous trends facing whatever industry you're in. And you probably don't hear these commercials or get exposed to these, but there's a lawyer here locally in the region. In fact, I think he's licensed in Illinois and Missouri only, but he runs lead generating ads here in Louisville. His name's Joe Cordell. And he ran an ad once recently that got my attention. I guess I'm a sick puppy and I pay attention to people's ads and things of that nature. But it was entitled The 10 Stupidest Mistakes Guys Make When Seeking a Divorce. Now, if I'm in that mindset of I'm thinking about getting a divorce, that would get my attention. 10 of the stupidest mistakes guys make when seeking a divorce. I would register for that if I were getting a divorce, even if I already had a lawyer picked out. I would want to know, what are the 10 stupidest mistakes? And I mentioned earlier, you want to appeal to people's self-interest and their sense of curiosity. Because the first thing that does is if I'm in a position where I'm considering divorce, that appeals to my self-interest. And second of all, it's going to appeal to my sense of curiosity because the 10 stupidest mistakes guys make. I want to know, what are those 10 stupidest mistakes? So think strategically as you develop a superior access vehicle as opposed to just tossing something out there that you hope, toss enough stuff at the wall and hope something sticks. Next, you want to capture lead data. You want to put a registration form on every web page on your website. That transitions your website from being an outdated brochure into a marketing weapon. Probably 95% of the businesses out there, I take that back, probably more like 99% of the businesses out there have little more than an outdated brochure as a website. 95% of those websites do not have any lead capture or lead generation device on it. Have your website at least contribute to the sales process by having lead capture and lead generation devices on your website. And then you guide your prospects to your website via all your marketing. And what will that enable you to do? Fuel your automated follow-up sequences, which that's step number 3. Automate the early stages of your follow-up. This allows you to deliver a consistent experience to your prospects, continues to follow up with prospects after typical sales reps quit. Remember the 104 calls? I'm going to keep hammering on those 104 calls. Your sales reps are not going to stick with it that long. They're under the gun to perform, hit their numbers, and produce. So they aren't going to stick around very long, and they're not going to continue to follow up with prospects the 9.3 times necessary. So this automation helps you bake that in to your process. Then you'll eliminate lead slippage, and this will also help you reduce common expenses. You can strategically use your human capital, which will allow you to reduce waste and expense, such as travel expenses, lodging expenses, and meals. Because when you send a sales rep out or you send a human being out to meet with a prospect that isn't ready, you just threw money down the drain. Just like tossing money into the toilet. Because that's one of the most expensive things you can do is send a person out. You got to pay for their travel. If they got to stay overnight, you got to pay for their lodging. You got to pay for their meals. And oftentimes, sales reps will go out to meet with prospects long before the prospects are ready to make a buying decision. So you can offload some of that early part of the sales process in order to foster deals faster. Next, you want to educate, educate, educate. You'll hear me say this a few times today. The one who educates the most wins. Because if you think about it, your average prospect knows about 20% of what they need to know to make an educated buying decision. This helps you narrow the gap. Empower your prospects to make informed decisions versus high-pressure tactics. Market strategically instead of tactically. This will help you reduce time to a deal. So always educate whenever possible. Next, build credibility and trust. Come from a place of selflessness versus being selfish. Be of service. Show your prospects that you care. Help them overcome hurdles in their life. Don't sell, but educate, inform, and guide. Next, you want to establish a favorable buying criteria. What strengths do you have that your competitors can't easily match? What weaknesses do your competitors have that you can exploit without trashing them publicly? What questions can you ask to steer your prospects to favor you? I'll give you a couple examples. 10 things to look for in an IT provider. 5 questions you must have answered about blah, blah, blah. And one of the things we used with one of our clients that worked very well was a small independent private preschool in Florida, where we developed a report called 16 Must Ask Questions to Relieve Your Stress and Worry When Choosing a Child Care Provider. Now, if you're a first-time parent, you have a lot of anxiety, stress, and worry about where you're going to send your kid during the day when you go to work. So 16 must-ask questions to relieve your stress and worry when choosing a child care provider was much more enticing than, you know, sign up for our newsletter or sign up here for a free report on why our preschool is the best in town. We gave them something of value. So, and we also, throughout that, through those 16 questions, when they go to other preschools or other child care providers and ask them those 16 questions, they knew that those were the 16 questions those competitors would have trouble measuring up. So what can you do to help establish a favorable buying criteria that also makes it difficult for your competitors to match you? And it's not all about price. That's the key in this. Next, you want to bake into your processes a way to overcome objections. When you educate first, you can anticipate and overcome objections before they arise. For instance, what frequently asked questions do you get? And next, here's a good one. What questions should your prospects be asking about solutions like yours? I just mentioned the 16 must-ask questions and how that helped to establish a favorable buying criteria for that preschool. What can you do that's similar? What can you do to overcome that stale, not realistic price objection? Oh, your price is too high. Well, we all know that that's 95% of the time, that's just a stall tactic. They're not ready to make a decision yet. But they toss that out there because they think, oh, well, that sounds good. You know, we've got a tight budget, so your price is too high. Maybe you come back at them with something like this. We're not the lowest price provider because we hand select the finest ingredients to put into our products. Or what about this? We use a 17-part process. Most use a 7-part process that results in greater defects and failures. Or maybe you want to turn the fact that you don't advertise and market publicly on a regular basis, you don't spend a lot in advertising, is the reason that you do offer such a low price. You can say something along the lines of, we don't pay to advertise in expensive mediums such as TV, radio, and magazines. All of our marketing is achieved through our website and word of mouth. That's how we can offer you the prices we do. Something like that. So then that way you overcome the objection. Because the price thing can work both ways. If somebody views you as cheap or lower quality because you have a low price, then you can offset that through something like this. Same thing with the high price. We already talked about that. And then lastly, you want to leverage marketing's interrelationship. I realize the diagram on the screen may not be the clearest. I'll have a bigger one for you here in a minute. We're going to talk about this in just a second. But when you leverage marketing's interrelationship, that helps you build widespread visibility and take a militaristic approach to marketing. Because if you look at the military, I'm not a military guy, but I admire the way they go into battle and how they go into wars. As long as they win the war, that's what they're focused on. That's the strategy, win the war. And then the tactical pursuits, such as sending in ground troops, guerrilla forces, airstrikes, long-range missiles, tanks, things of that nature, they go in to overwhelm the target. You need to do the same thing with your marketing. Implement at least one tactic from each strategic element. We're going to talk about each one of these now. which segues into the next section here. What can you do to turn the tide in your favor? Let's talk about 8 strategies to improve your sales and marketing performance immediately. Number 1, you can better utilize the internet. And I'm talking about your website, blog, utilize search engine optimization, pay-per-click marketing, cost per action marketing, utilize forums, and social networking. You want to use the internet to generate leads for your sales process and also help you meet long-distance prospects and partners. In the next screen I'm going to show you, this is the internet usage by age. As you can see, back in 2000, we had about a 50% of the people were online. Today, that's as high as 75%. And you can also see that every generation is using the internet more. So that's, I want to show you that so that way you understand your prospects are going online. If you think that it's a nice to have a website or your website is secondary, please get out of that thinking immediately. Your website is a critical component and your internet strategy is a critical component for the growth of your business. Next, you want to optimize your one-to-one or your interpersonal contacts, your interpersonal relationships. And I'm talking about your use of the telephone, email, letters that you send, interpersonal meetings, networking such as B&I groups or meet and greets, meetups, tweetups, things like that. And then your instant messaging and text messaging tactics. And then also mobile. Mobile falls under this. I kind of struggled with whether mobile belongs in the internet or whether mobile belongs here. And I think it belongs here a little more simply because you're capturing prospects at a moment that's more personal to them. When they got their phone with them, they're looking for something right now. It's a little more of an instantaneous search. And then mobile is the next wave. And think about QR codes and then text messaging to get more information. The reason I say this is the next big wave, look at Amazon. They're redesigning their entire business around mobile, in particularly tablet PCs. Something else you want to optimize that falls under your one-to-one contact are your scripts. For example, what are 10 ask questions that you want answered about every prospect? If you have a sales force, you need to arm them with these questions and say, look, you need to come back with these questions answered for every meeting you go on or every phone interaction, whatever. Your scripts don't have to be so detailed that every word is scripted out, but you want to have some general talking points and you want to have your sales force or the people that interact with your prospects regularly, you want to have them trained and polished enough to where it sounds conversational. Last thing you want is like when you call up a support line and you can tell they're reading on their screen every word. You want to make it sound very conversational. And I'm going to share with you some open and click-through rates for email because there's a lot of misleading information out there. And I don't want you to think that just because email's free and it's less expensive that you should stop sending out letters or direct mail or utilizing other marketing methods. And I'm not denouncing email by any means. It needs to be a key component of your marketing strategy and also your one-to-one interactions. But you can see on the left that the latest stats show that there's about 11.2% open rate on average. And then on the right, show you the graph there that shows there's about 1.4% click-through rate. So what does that mean? That means the average click-through rate of the total email sent is about 0.2%. So if you're going to design an email campaign or a campaign that utilizes email heavily, you need to have that number in the back of your head. So that way you don't go into it expecting way too much. And another reason I bring this up is a lot of clients and prospects come to me and think, oh, well, I should get a 25% open rate on my email. That's fine and dandy, but you also need to understand if you want people to act once they read that email, you need to know what the click-through rates are. And they're not that high. So you're going to have a large volume of emails to get the results that you desire. And again, I'm not saying this to denounce email or discourage you from using email. I just want you to be informed. So that way you know that just because you capture a lot of email addresses or you go out and you run an email list, you've got to still do your work and your due diligence. Anyway, let's move on. Next, you want to better utilize education marketing. And I'm talking about things such as seminars, webinars, teleseminars, trade shows, conferences, the free reports that you give away, or maybe they're paid reports, white papers, case studies, so forth. What are five things your prospect needs to know about your industry, its products and services? What aren't they being told today? And what prevents you from being the person to tell them what they need to be told today? Think in those lines. Next, what about your public and media relations strategy? Things such as press releases, articles. It's very easy to write an article about your company or have an article written about your company, because there's so many online article sharing sites out there that you're not limited to getting the ear or the eye of a reporter to do something about your business or write an article about your business. You can take it to the streets, more or less. And there's just as many people that, just as many authors and editors that are looking for people like you as you are looking for them these days, because they're always looking for a new story, always looking for a different angle. Also, what about the interviews that you engage in, whether it's TV or radio, your public service announcements, the news about your company, your media kits, and then reputation management? Usually I go on a long diatribe about reputation management, but I'll try to make this as succinct as possible in saying, if you don't have accounts reserved at Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook that are your name, your company name, and any trademark products and services that you offer, go reserve those today. Even if you don't plan on engaging in social media activity and you're not going to be tweeting it up, or you're not going to be updating your status all the time, you're not going to have a Facebook page, any of that, you still want to reserve those names. It's very easy for someone to go out and reserve, because it's free. They can go out and reserve those names, start posting as an imposter and looking like an official person of your company. There's very little recourse you can have initially. And once that your reputation has been damaged a little bit, it's harder to recover. So at least go out there and do that. Have somebody in charge of monitoring the conversation that's going on online throughout these social media outlets, so that way you can adapt. Even if you're not going to engage in the conversation yourself, at least be aware that it's going on, because this stuff isn't going anywhere. A lot of people think they can bury their head in the sand, it'll just go away. Not the case. Don't be naive like those other people. And then for the media, make it as easy as possible to do a story about you. And one outlet you can go to is HARO, HARO.com. And that stands for Help a Reporter Out. You can register there, get in their database, and then if somebody's searching for a topic and wants to do an interview with somebody from the industry, let's say you're an IT professional, you can register as an IT professional, and you may get inquiries about doing a story with you or interviewing you or doing a story on you or the trends that you're seeing in the industry, so forth. So that's a little freebie tip for you. Next, what about your direct mail strategy? Talking about postcards, letters, lumpy mail, fulfillment and packaging, or FedEx and UPS. And the reason I put FedEx or UPS on there is a lot of sales gurus suggest that if you're prospecting, utilize a FedEx envelope or a UPS envelope as opposed to standard mail. If you've got a client that you're really trying to impress, this is an easy way to do it. Yeah, it's going to cost a little bit more, but the odds of that thing getting opened as opposed to a regular snail mail letter, a lot higher. And today, direct mail is sort of becoming in vogue again because so many people are transitioning stuff online. They're cutting back in the amount of direct mail they send and their overall advertising. So you can stand out a little bit in the mailbox, whereas you couldn't before. And I'm going to share with you some direct mail open rates here. But understand that the open rates depend highly on the list that you're using, whether it's a house list, a rented list, or some third-party list, the offer, and the timing, and then also your attention grabber. And the attention grabber can be the headline or some other thing that's going to get their attention. Now, if it's lumpy mail, that's going to get their attention because they're going to see there's something in the mail itself. And then when they open it up, how well do you tie that attention grabber to your letter? So that's what I'm talking about there. Now, open rates can range anywhere from 0.5% all the way up to 15%. And again, it all depends on those four factors: the list that you're using, the offer, the timing, and the attention grabber. Next, what about your advertising strategy? How well do you utilize TV, radio, media buying? And media buying, I'm talking about running lists, running different spots through different media, and so forth. What about your signage? And by signage, I'm talking about billboards, transportation ads, you know, like you see on the big public transit buses, taxi cabs, those gazebos that people sit in to wait on the public transportation bus, things of that nature. And then also, what about like little league sporting events? You always see, you know, signs out in the outfield for baseball in particular, or signs around whatever it is, maybe a volleyball match. You've got different areas to sponsor different things, which, you know, sponsorship is something I didn't include on this particular one. We'll talk about it in a little bit, but do you utilize sponsorship of events? Maybe there's a cancer walk locally. Are you sponsoring that? Are you participating in any way? And what about co-op? There's a girl here locally that I talked to not too long ago that told me that the manufacturer will chip in a certain amount to send out 1,500 postcards to prospects every single month, and they pay $200. And the manufacturer designs the postcard and helps them send it out. Pretty good deal. So if you represent a major manufacturer, do you utilize your co-op advertising dollars? And then what about your print media? Newspapers, magazines, trade journals, etc. How well are you utilizing that? One thing you might want to consider is partnering with another firm to co-brand, so to speak. I saw one recently where you go into a certain store, you purchase a certain item, and you send the receipt in and you get some free vacation or something. So you had three different companies that were involved in the advertising piece. That's another way that you can reduce your advertising dollars, but still have some impact. Next, what about your sales literature strategy? Talking about brochures, testimonials, tear sheets, and your business cards. One of the first tips I got when I started my own business, it's still a valid tip, is to put something on the back of your business card that encourages people to go to your website or to a separate website and register for some type of lead magnet. And one of the ones that I have on my business card, and again, it's not about me, I'm just giving you an example, is AskRogerBauer.com. You go there, you enter your first name, email address, and you present to me your biggest marketing challenge today. All that site is designed to do is generate leads and more interest. Next, what about your partnership strategy, your joint ventures, your endorsements, affiliates? And an affiliate program is really a little more than a commission-only sales force. You don't pay anybody, you don't pay affiliates until they generate a sale. So that's something that you can incorporate into your business to increase sales. It's not that complicated to do, and you can have more commission-only sales reps working for you. And it depends on how aggressive they want to be and how much money they want to make in terms of how much money it's going to cost you. But it's another sales channel that you can open up pretty inexpensively very quickly. Then what about referrals? Do you have a formalized referral system? And then finally, sponsorships. I talked about that before, about, you know, sponsoring events, little league teams, cancer walks, Alzheimer's events, things like that. Ask yourself, who has access that you'd like to gain? Who has that? And then who's highly regarded in your industry? And then how can you craft a win-win-win outcome? So that way the prospect wins, your partner wins, and obviously you win. That's the way you want to go about partnerships. And now what I just described, as you see on the screen there, is a bigger shot of the diagram that I showed you earlier. That's marketing's interrelationship. I just talked about all of those strategies rather quickly. Internet, one-to-one contact, education, public and media relations, direct mail, advertising, sales literature, and partnerships. Mentioned before, you want to implement at least one tactic from each one of these eight overarching strategies. And that will generate the exponential results that you see in the middle. It's the combination of doing different things, implementing different strategies to work together that you get the exponential results. Doing one of these things separately, very tactical, not going to generate the results you want. I'm going to give you an example of that right now. Here are some different tactical advertising and marketing options. I'm not going to go down each one, but you can see at the top there, Tiny Yellow Pages ad, $5,000. 500 direct mail letters, $2,200. Classified ad in USA Today for a week, $1,500. 2,500 AdWords clicks at $1 a click, obviously $2,500. And if you're going to do a website redesign or a design project, $5,500 to $25,000. Any single one of these by itself is very tactical. And don't expect this to do all the heavy lifting for your business and inject you with a sales windfall or a profit windfall by itself. It's the combination of doing different things that's going to deliver the results you're looking for. And here's an example tactical campaign for 6 months. As you can see, I'm picking out three different things. Say you do a tiny Yellow Pages ad and you do the 6-installment payment plan. So you're going to pay $800 a month for a total of $4,800. And let's say you also do some search engine optimization at $1,500 a month. That's going to cost you $9,000. And let's say you want to do a pay-per-click campaign. So that's 2,500 AdWords clicks for at $1. That's going to cost you $2,500 a month or $15,000 overall. So this 6 month total outlay for your business is going to be $28,800. There's nothing strategic or systematized by this. You're just more or less trying to add traffic, add water, so to speak. The likely results are going to be disappointing because there's no systematic or strategic approach to this. You're just doing three separate things that you hope generates a little bit of traction. We're going to talk more about that in just a little bit. But next, let's talk about seven things to look for in a potential sales and marketing partner. What I want to try to do here is help you not to make a very costly mistake that so many of your competitors and even a lot of your non-competitors make on a daily basis. Number one, and I've hammered this already pretty good today, they should be very adept at developing a growth strategy for your business. Most ad and marketing firms toss tactics at business problems in a haphazard fashion. I just gave you the example of the $28,800 campaign where you can take three tactical approaches. It's going to cost you $30,000, but the results are going to be very sporadic and very disappointing, more often than not, because there's not an overlying strategy for the approach. So ask your marketing partner how they're going to achieve success for you. Is it going to be just throwing a few tactics at it, like we showed you in the previous example, or do they have a strategy? Next, your partner should be able to develop a lead-generating website, because the web generates great leads when you know how to take advantage. You should have a lead capture device on every page that feeds your automated follow-up sequences. That helps you offload the early stages of the sales process, reduce the cost of sale, increase sales, and improve performance. Next, your partner should help you increase your visibility via the internet. 92% of companies now employ some form of search engine optimization on their websites. That's up from 40% just 5 years ago. So what does that tell you? That tells you your competitors are implementing this stuff. It's not a nice to have anymore. People aren't going to the Yellow Pages to look up companies like yours. They're going online, they're doing Google searches. Now, just FYI, SEO services can range anywhere from $1,000 to $15,000 a month, depending upon the complexity. What keywords are you going to focus on? How competitive are those keywords? What competitors seem to be doing SEO today? How aggressive are they? How aggressive do you want to be? So forth. Now, I mentioned customers are going online searching through Google as opposed to picking up the Yellow Pages. Well, 81% go online before purchasing instead of those offline options like the Yellow Pages. 98% of Google searchers stop on page one. So if you're buried down there around page two or three, you're not getting discovered by your best prospects. They're going to your competitors. Next, your partner should be able to incorporate education into your marketing. Mentioned before, the one who educates the most wins. It should be the cornerstone of your marketing. What are five things your prospects need to know about what you offer? What are the most frequently asked questions you receive? And then what should your prospects be asking you and your competitors? Establish that favorable buying criteria through questions that you educate your prospects to ask. And it's not necessarily on your behalf, it's just questions that are going to paint you in the most positive light. So you want to incorporate education into your marketing at every step. Your partner should know how to do that. Now here's some stats on education and how effective it is. Educated prospects are 5 times more likely to buy, and this comes from Next Century Media and Bill Harvey. 94% of educated customers are more satisfied with their purchase. again, from Next Century Media. Educated customers are 93% more likely to tell their friends than non-educated prospects or customers. Next, your partner should be able to train your staff. This should go without saying, but most marketing firms don't want you to know what they're doing behind the scenes. And why do they do that? Because they want to keep their billable hours high. Training allows you to build your marketing expertise over time. That shortens your learning curve, improves your performance, and reduces expenses. Effective training can increase productivity by 230%. That comes from impactfactory.com. Next, your partner should offer a tangible ROI proposition. Seems pretty obvious, right? But how many truly offer this? This ties back into that strategy. Fluff and flash don't cut it in today's world. Believe it or not, simplicity still works best. Now here's just a little quick snapshot of some of the results we've helped produce from some of our clients. And this is just a little slice. This isn't the whole pie or anything like that. A real estate team in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Tigo and Tracy Venturi, doubled their sales from $9 million in revenue to $18 million in just 12 months. We helped a small preschool in Gainesville, Florida, improve their closing ratios by 600%. That same preschool saw a 250% increase in leads and $180,000 profit growth in just 87 days. An automotive repair shop in Temecula, California, saw an increase in sales of 27% in just 28 days. Those are just some of the results we've been able to help our clients achieve. Next, your partner should be able to demonstrate a thorough understanding of your sales process and marketing's interrelationship. You can't optimize something if you don't track it, right? Your partner should understand how each strategy within marketing's interrelationship impacts sales. And we talked pretty, not lengthy, but we talked about marketing's interrelationship enough to the point that you've got a pretty good understanding of the 8 different things you need to maximize within your business to achieve exponential results. Your marketing partner, sales and marketing partner, should understand that diagram pretty well and how they can utilize it and leverage it to grow your business. So allow me a moment, now that we've covered a good lion's share of the material, to go over how my team and I can help you grow sales. We'll help you map out a growth strategy, develop a lead-generating website for you, incorporate search engine optimization, we'll help you educate your prospects, train your staff, deliver a tangible ROI, and since we designed the marketing's interrelationship diagram, we'll implement multiple marketing strategies that leverage marketing's interrelationship very well. Now, consider implementing a system that targets ideal prospects, offers value at each touch point, educates prospects and existing clients, cuts time to a deal by as much as 25%, automates the early stages of the sales process, minimizes reliance on discounting, improves closing ratios by as much as 600%, positions you as the expert in logical conclusion when it comes time to make a buying decision, establishes favorable buying criteria, and maximizes the use of marketing's interrelationship. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Sounds like the holy grail of sales and marketing systems. Well, let me introduce to you the X2 or Double Your Sales system. As you can see there, I'm looking in the green section in the middle that helps you develop a superior access vehicle, captures lead data, automates the early stages of the sales process, educates your prospects, builds credibility and trust, establishes favorable buying criteria, overcomes objections, and helps you close more business. Now, what is this like? To install this type of horsepower, it's a lot like hiring a CMO for your organization. And what would that cost you? Well, you can see here by the graph on the right from salary.com, salaries range anywhere from $121,864 all the way up to $310,980 a year. The median salary for a CMO is $200,571 a year. That would be like paying $16,714.25 a month. The low-end salary is $121,864 a year. That would be like paying $10,155.33 a month. What about a marketing director? Their salaries range from $89,856 up to $188,643 a year. Median salary is $133,960 a year, which is $11,163.33 a month, The low end salary, $89,856 a year, $7,488 a month. So if you were going to hire us to install this system for you, your likely investment would not even be at the low end of that $7,488 a month. On average, clients typically pay us $4,500 a month for a 3-month trial. And then, depending upon your happiness and where you want to go, we have multiple models after that. We can do a flat percentage of revenue, a base plus incremental revenue percentage, and then a flat monthly fee. So what is your next step? Your next step is to call me at 502-394-0460. Again, my name is Roger. We'll discuss your business, determine which strategy is best for you today, whether it's a combination of training, implementation, coaching or consulting, or some type of hybrid solution. Presented to you a lot of stats, trends, analysis, facts, good tidbits that you can take and implement for your business, some strategies, some steps, a lot of really good stuff today. But you know what? None of that does any good if you're not going to take action. I mean, I can feed you all of the stats, education, information that you can possibly comprehend, withstand, understand, so forth. But it doesn't do you any good if you don't take action. So that's what I want to implore you to do today. Mention the X2 sales system. This is a heck of a deal. It really is. Because I showed you how much it would cost if you were going to go hire a marketing director. And guess what? You're going to have to train a marketing director to get up to snuff on all of this stuff anyway. A CMO, they're going to have a pretty good idea of it, but that's going to cost you considerable money every single month. And those are just the salaries. It doesn't include, you know, benefits that you're going to have to pay, taxes on top of that, vacation time, things of that nature. So I think you understand this is a pretty good deal. I mean, it's something that if you are truly committed to growing your business and growing your sales, pick up the phone, call me 502-394-0460. Now, I've stayed pretty true to this 60-minute deal, which I'm very proud of that. I'm happy that I can meet the expectations that I set of keeping this at an hour. But if you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, best way to do that is to email me at the email address you see on the screen. That's roger@seninja.com. Or again, you can call me, 502-394-0460. Let's get your business growing and let's craft a way that we can work together. There's something else that we've got that we offer that we don't make too public, but if you're in a budget situation, we've got to name your own price. You tell us what is a realistic budget for your business, and we will tell you whether we can fit within that budget to make something work for your business. Obviously, if you call me up and say, well, Roger, I've only got $50 a month to spend, not going to go very far with that. Or I've got $500 to spend, not going to go very far with that. $1,000, probably not going to get very far with that either. But if you come to us with a realistic budgetary figure, we'll figure out a way to make it work for both parties because we want to help you grow your business. So don't just sit there and take the information and go, wow, that was interesting. Or that was a really neat presentation. Do something about it. Pick up the phone. Call me now, 502-394-0460. Congratulations. You made it to the end of the executive briefing. I look forward to talking to you. This is Roger Bauer signing off. Talk to you again soon.